I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. I have Tony Stubblebein on the show with me this week. Of course, this is Mike Vardy, the founder of Productivityist and Productivity Strategist. And Tony Stubblebein is the he's kind of the man behind, the founder of Coach.me. It used to be called Lyft, not the car company, but L-I-F-T. Now it's called Coach.me. And we talk a lot about, you know, working with teams, coaching, how to develop leadership skills. There's a lot of stuff that we've jammed into this episode. And if you are listening to this episode, then you may want to know that you can get an even more enhanced version, which has even more information, if you become a Patreon supporter. I'll talk more about that after the interview, but let's just dive right in because there's lots of good stuff to get to. Here I am with Tony Stubblebein, just having a great conversation about the impact of coaching and the impact of different systems that can help, you know, people do even better than they already are here on the Productivityist Podcast. Enjoy. I've got Tony Stubblebein with me here. He is, is it fair to say you're the man behind Coach.me at this point?
I mean, it is true. I mean, we could have a whole discussion about just sort of the complicated process of putting a company together and the ups and downs. But, you know, at this point, I am the founder of Coach.me. I'm the CEO. And it's hard to say exactly how big the company is. I could say we're 4 staffers. I could say we're 6 staffers. I could say we're 200 people. I mean, we pay that many people in a given month. So there's a lot of ways to describe it. But I am the public face of it these days.
Now, the last time we spoke was on the Workflowing podcast, and that was when Coach.me was not Coach.me yet. In fact, I remember when I was heading down to, oddly enough, it's been about a year because I was going down to the World Domination Summit, which has just passed as we're recording this. And I was going to San Francisco. I was going to San Francisco and we were talking. I think it was somewhere around that time. When did the name change happen? Then I can pinpoint it.
January 1st, we changed the name. But we were talking about NBA basketball, probably.
Yeah, we were. And you'd mentioned that the name change was happening and go check it out. And I'm like, oh, this is – so why the shift? Why – because Lyft was – I mean, in my – and I'll be – you know, I'm going to kind of give the Cliff's Notes version of it – was basically like, you know, a habit tracking – crowdfunded habit tracking for the – or not. I mean, you had a lot of –
I call it community – like a community supported goal tracking,
right?
And it was huge. I mean, we had a community of millions of people. We're having a major impact in people's lives, but then you have to go back to the business of it. We were, and so goal tracking on its own had sort of two problems. One, it was only able to exist through the funding of venture capitalists. And at some point, you know, we have to turn it into a business. I mean, I'm doing this because I love it, and I don't want it to go away. And the only way to guarantee that I get to work on this problem of, you know, bringing, kind of training everyone in the world who wants it on elite performance and human potential, and like, what can they do to make their lives better? That's what I think my life's work is. But in order to make it happen, it has to be a business of someday. So that was one of the drivers. The other driver was just a desire to go a lot deeper with people. That when you're building a goal tracker, and a lot of those goals are kind of habit based, you know, we would get a lot of we get kind of two types of feedback. One feedback was, hey, you know, thank you so much. I just had my best dentist appointment ever because I built the habit of flossing. And I was like, okay, thank you. Good for you. I'm glad that you're flossing now. Although, you know, I don't want to make you sad, but I've actually heard the research on flossing is a little bit inconclusive. Mm-hmm. Like, actually, oral health researchers are a little bit on the fence about the value of flossing for yourself. So it's not that big of an accomplishment. And then we get these other people that would give us some epic story, like, you know, I lost 10 pounds, you know, following a low carb diet, and now I'm studying Vietnamese and Italian because I'm getting ready to travel the world for a year.
Right.
And like, that end of the spectrum was the end of the spectrum that I loved. Like, I loved hearing those stories, and I just felt like goal tracking was not enough for the really big accomplishments in life. And you know, as we were trying to figure out what to do, it was obvious that we shouldn't be a goal tracker. We should be a coaching platform. We had a ton of people inside of our own community that were qualified to be coaches, either because they were coaches in real life or because they had this tremendous personal success that they could mentor other people in. And if we did that, we could do so much more to, kind of push people to their limits. And so, and then of course it solves every other problem in the business. It turns us into an actual business. We have revenue. Revenue gives us ways to grow. And like, it just was, everything clicked once we did that. And then just to make it clear what we were doing, the name change made that a lot easier. It was, we kind of rolled it out as we tend to do. We roll things. We're always experimenting. We rolled out these experiments, and people just kept saying, "Oh, this goal tracker now has this added feature, coaching." And I was like, "No."
It's the other way around.
So now the way I describe the company to people is that we have three tiers of coaching. We have personal coaching, or like individual coaching, where you're self-coaching, where you're coaching yourself, which is free, and that uses the tracking tools and the goal setting tools that were available in the original Lyft. Community coaching, which is also free, which uses a massive database of questions and answers and props from the community, and that's about the community helping each other. And then professional coaching, where you have a real personal one-on-one coach who is talking to you every day, usually via chat, text messaging, essentially. So it doesn't have to be like this hour-long meeting on your calendar every week. It's more just like that quick check-in, that accountability, that pushing you to take the next step, that always having access to advice from someone who's been there before. I find that's amazing, and I know so many hyper successful people who credit personal coaching as their own secret weapon. But then when, you and I mean, I just think about my own life, it never dawned on me that I could have a personal coach, because I didn't know how to find them. And then if you could find them, they're normally very expensive. But our personal coaching starts at $15 a week, which is super affordable if you know anything about the world of coaching.
It is. It's really affordable. And one of the things that I think a lot of people need to look at, and why habit tracking takes it to one level, obviously, but the great thing about coaching is that if you are somebody who, like me, who has a great affinity to, time management and all that stuff, and I'm really good at that, but I suck at exercise for some god-awful reason, getting habit tracking won't necessarily be the thing that pushes me, in that direction. By the way, we're getting renovations still done right now, so that's what you're hearing in the background. No one's getting shot in the background. We're getting our bathroom done down the hall, so.
It's like Breaking Bad over there in the background. No, it's good. I feel like it's better that it's someone else rather than me. We had incredible street construction outside of our office for a long time. Could be like bombs going out outside of my building.
But the thing is, I mean, there's a good example. I'm having renovations done because I'm not good at that thing, so I'm going to pay somebody else to do that thing. And it's kind of like, for me, there's a reason that I've used a personal trainer. There's a reason that, and to have access to that at such a low price point, but also those who've been there, right? Because, that's the thing. Now your coaches have initially come from within coach.me, right? Is that kind of how it's played out?
So, there's this kind of process of building this marketplace of coaches, and the initial recruits were all drawn from the community. And so we're right, actually, probably by the time this podcast launches, we'll also have just launched the Coach.me as an open platform that's available to all coaches in the world. And part of that launch is that we've developed our own certification program for digital coaches, you know, based on, because, which actually doesn't exist anywhere else in the world, because digital coaching is not something that's ever existed before. Mm-hmm. There's face-to-face coaching, and that's well known, and there's a ton of certifying bodies for that. But no one actually knows how to do digital coaching. And the reason I'm so confident in saying that is because I threw 1,000 coaches from our community into one platform and watched who did better than everyone else. And it turned out that pre-existing certification was a predictor of poor performance. Like, this was so shocking to me. The professional coaches almost always failed to match the success rates of the sort of super successful, you know, peer mentors. Like, you know, essentially I could take an amateur and have them coach something that they had personal success in, and that person often would be 3 times more successful than the, based on client success rates, which we can measure, would be 3 times more successful than an experienced coach. And that just tells you what is going on in digital coaching. It's just a new branch of coaching. And it took us basically 10 months of running experiments, running a lot of coaches through different ways of coaching, and then observing what worked and what didn't work, to be able to come out and say, all right, this is what digital coaching is. This is how you have to approach it. And we can train you for it. We're willing to train everyone. We give the certification for free. We grade the certification exam for free. We just really want to make sure that there are great digital coaches out there in the world. And so that process of getting there, though, we were incredibly fortunate to have the original Lyft community, because they're so generous and they were so up for trying to help each other that we could just, we were able to run this, you know, I would call it a beautiful experiment of people helping each other and achieving all sorts of things that the original app never could.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about Coach.me for Teams. And it's Coach.me. I say Coach.me. Is that pretty much the way you'd want to say
it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I do say Coach.me. I mean, it is our URL.
Yeah.
And right. So we talked beforehand about Coach.me for Teams, which I wanted to talk to you about it because it's like a brand new product that's in development. Mm-hmm. It's not. And I feel like what we can have is a debate about how you would set this up.
Right.
So let me give you the backstory of it. Is a friend of mine who runs a startup, this is maybe a 90-person startup, came to me and said, you know, it would be great if your business coaches could coach our staff in, you know, leadership habits and leadership skills and, like, really, you know, top-end professional skills. We have some executive coaches who serve the company, but they, you know, they can't serve everyone in the company. And executive coaching is, like, we kind of came to the conclusion, you know, executive coaching is completely backwards, right? Like, I usually say, you don't get an executive coach until it's too late, right?
Right.
It's like, you're the CEO, you're in way over your head, and then you get a coach. Wouldn't it be so much better if you could start being groomed for leadership from your first day in office? And you know, when you're 22, let's start grooming you on how to be a person who can make a big impact in the company. Not just merely get your job done, but like find the unsolved problems in the company and actually go out and solve them. And you know, we think that's something we can coach in. And what we're sort of defining are, what are the ideal professional skills and habits of future leaders? And I bet you have a ton of ideas about what might go into that.
Oh, I mean, for example, you know, the old models of productivity and time management are so critical to be kind of abolished. When you go into a large organization, and you've probably seen this as well,
right,
where things are so dyed in the wool and entrenched. Email management is a classic example. So, I mean, people will use like Outlook to manage their tasks until, you know, and clearly they don't get managed well because that's not what it's designed for. So to teach some kind of approach that's going to allow people to manage all those inputs that are coming our way,
right,
you know,
right,
I think that's a huge one, right?
Well, you know, the way we've been pitching it lately is that we provide a leadership menu where there's five topics that the coaches are able to coach. And when they coach it, they'll break that topic into an actual habit and then work through all of the, like, the skills around that habit. But one of the areas that we've done for everyone that's been interested so far is, you know, efficient, I mean, I almost called it inbox management, but we're in a world where people have multiple inboxes, right? So it's like for our early trial companies, it's, you know, efficient communication, you know, managing of their inboxes is email, it's Slack, it's Pivotal, you know, it's like we have a lot of those inboxes now. But having a system for how to process that, that preserves maker time, gives you more time in the day, is actually effective and helps you be clear with the rest of the company. I mean, that's a set of skills that you're not born with.
Absolutely. And every company kind of has these different tools. So to have an approach that would help you would allow you to be, you know, and how you deal with other people as well is going to be critical. I noticed that when I'm going into organizations and talking to them about how they manage their tasks, and these are small companies as well as larger ones, even smaller companies are like, well, why would I add Slack to the mix when I already have email? And then you have to kind of describe, okay, well, here's what Slack can do for you versus here's what email can do for you. So the understanding of what those inboxes can do for you if you leverage them appropriately are also important.
What ends up happening, I mean, we're right at the beginning of this. I mean, just to kind of finish the story, is this friend asked for this. And I thought, oh, well, we could do it for you just because we're friends. But, you know, is this a real thing?
Right.
So I put it out to my community, and, you know, is, would anyone else be interested? And overnight, we have 100 companies signed up for it.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, actually, that's too many companies. I don't, I'm not ready for that. But, you know, that I've been going through, kind of calling them one by one and setting them up as fast as we can. And it's like, you know, the patterns are so consistent that people are struggling with the communication overload. And that's definitely a really common pattern. And that manifests in two ways. There's at this higher level, what strategically, like how should people be thinking about things? And that's a discussion with upper management. And you want to bring the whole staff into that discussion. But definitely upper management needs to be involved in that at the strategic level. And then you have the day-to-day of putting those skills in place. And I feel like as we develop it, I think about when I was a programmer back in the day, every now and then some company would release their career ladder. And it was like these really explicit skills that they wanted engineers in their company to know before moving up to the next grade. And it included like what book you should read and, you know, what accomplishments you should have had at work. And I just love that because I was so ambitious as a like 23-year-old, but I had no idea, you know, where to put that ambition. And so it's fun is to go into these companies and kind of help define, you know, what is that career, you know, that skill roadmap look like? What are the other areas that you think would be important?
Well, I mean, I think in terms of communication, just, you know, just dealing with growth, scale. I know in my experience, and this is something that's happening to me right now. We're talking before the call and how productivity is just growing pretty intently. My job was to be my only management position before this was to be a manager at Costco, which gave me a lot of skills, make no mistake, right. But it's a different, you're dealing with, you know, different folks. And I remember when I was being trained to become a manager, the one leader said, he said, you know, you have all the skills to do it. We need to teach you those people skills. So that's another one, like the people skills, how to deal with making sure that those soft skills that you can deal with the people that are in your organization, both, you know, let's say introverts and extroverts, so that you can leverage their skills and help them grow as well.
I'm curious, you know, as I throw these out to you, whether you're just going to keep guessing the area. It's almost like Family Feud is what we're playing right now. So this is another one. Bang, bang.
Survey says.
Yes. right now we're calling it Crucial Conversations. Sometimes the titling of these is a little bit hard, but it is absolutely the communication skills. Young employees really struggle with empathy, I think. A lot of times there's like one of the biggest work lessons I ever learned was I was really complaining about some partner company we were working with and how the people that worked there seemed to be morons and nothing got done and, yada, yada. I was like really frustrated with them. And a much older coworker who I respected came to me and said, Tony, it might be true. You might be right. But here's another way of looking at it and something that I found to be really helpful in my whole career, which is just to realize nobody comes to work to do a bad job. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they're not dumb. Maybe they're in a bad situation. Maybe they're overloaded. Maybe they're good at something else and they've been put in this role where they have no real expertise. There's a million things that could be going on, but almost guaranteed one of them is not they came to work to screw you. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. Maybe they're in a bad position. Let me find out more about that. Let me see if I can be more helpful. And I just like, that is one of the most common things I've noticed as a manager when you're managing young people in a bigger organization, is there's a lot of like frustration with other employees that gets very personal. And one of the big growth areas is just to really treat everyone as if they're trying to do a good work, but they might be in a bad situation. Because the situation is always addressable. Whereas the incompetence or the hurt feelings are really hard to address. So it starts there, and then it just moves up into this kind of anxiety about having difficult conversations. And that's why there's a really popular book called Crucial Conversations. And I've worked at companies that actually had this as a training that they made a lot of people go through. It's like, at some point you laugh at that you ever thought these were hard conversations, but most employees don't like to deliver bad news. So if I told you it's going to be done tomorrow, and I'm at one, it's 1 p.m., I'm halfway through my project, I'm halfway through my day, and I'm realizing, like, whoa, this is super complicated. This is like a week's worth of work. I'm not super excited to tell you that it's not going to be done tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Even though, it's just the truth, right?
Right.
Like, and you deserve that heads up. It's the right thing to do. But, that kind of picking your head up out of the weeds of whatever you're working in, and then having kind of a heads up conversation that is tinged with this tiny bit of emotion, until you're experienced at that, it blocks a lot of employees. So it just, you go on and on. You're right. There's a ton of communication skills in there that can be taught, and they come up on a daily basis. So if you have a coach who's checking in with you every day, what ends up happening is you catch these on the same day, and you're able to prep for them and actually get them done. Rather than I feel like the most times when career development is done, it's like you took a class 3 months ago,
yeah,
and then today you've got a crucial conversation. Those things do not connect.
No.
We're saying, I use an executive coach. I meet with them once a week. I meet with them on a Tuesday, but if something comes up for me on a Friday, nothing he said is relevant to it, and I will have forgotten about it by the time I see him again on Tuesday. And so in a lot of ways, this daily coaching, which is what happens in digital coaching, even though it's much shorter, and it's not face-to-face, and it has all these sort of perceived limitations as compared to face-to-face, it also has these incredible added strengths. And so, absolutely, it's one of the things we're excited about.
Another one for me would be the wellness factor, the balance factor. A lot of people, when they get started out with companies and they're I've spent enough time in San Francisco and in the startup world to kind of know that, when you're starting things out, it's full speed ahead. Even when I worked at Costco, honestly, when we were opening up a new warehouse, it was like 18-hour days.
Okay, let's debate this one.
Sure.
It's on the list. Let me tell you the controversy about it. So right now in Silicon Valley, which I include San Francisco where we're based,
yeah,
there's a huge amount of entitlement in startup employees right now.
Okay.
And so I initially called this work-life balance. And some people in management have pushed back on this because they feel like, no, this is not an invitation to go to the gym for 3 hours in the middle of the day.
No, yeah.
Right? Or, no, this is not like,
Yeah, I think it's more of a coping, like how to balance, like when you say balance, it's integration, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, you and I both know that work, I mean, I'm a night owl. Work happens at night, even when people aren't, you know? I mean, so I think it's the integration. I don't like the term balance because I've never felt that, I felt that that ship has sailed. And I don't even think it ever existed, to be honest. I think there's always been some member of identifier that, you know, I mean, look at, it's funny. I've done some looking into this. Like the name Smith came from what you did. You know, your last names came from the the occupation that you had.
Right.
So, I mean, frankly, that's something to consider. So I think that work-life integration is probably a little more.
A good way of putting it. Yeah. I have one other way that was really powerful that I heard in the last year. It was, I saw Marissa Mayer speak. She's the CEO of Yahoo. Mm-hmm. And she was describing this realization she had had about work-life balance where, you know, she was talking to this one employee who like was up at 6 a.m. taking calls with one part of the world and then appeared to be taking calls with other people in the world at 10 p.m. And she was really worried that this person was going to burn out. And so she talked to her, to this employee and said, you know, look, I'm worried for you. You know, is this the right work-life balance? You know, you're working a lot. And the person said, you know, that's an interesting question. You know, you seem concerned about the time of days that I'm working, but that's not actually the thing that's bothering me. What's sort of bothering me is that sometimes I miss my son's soccer game, which can be at like 4 or 5 p.m. I'm starting to resent that a little bit. And so the Marissa Mayer's like aha moment there was like, no, work-life balance is not X number of hours for work and Y number of hours for home. It's about where are the resentments and making sure that some trade-off you're making in life is not causing resentments. So this was a big aha for me because I was like, I love to work. I want to work all the time, but I have a slight resentment that I've never taken a major road trip.
Right.
So last summer, I convinced my partner, Sarah, to go on a working vacation with me where we rented a camper van and we took our dog and we drove to Yellowstone. And so we worked, we vacationed, we road tripped, and it completely fit into, you know, my summer. I was out of the office, but it ended up working out fine. And I was like, oh, well, there was a major life resentment that I just solved by thinking in terms of, you know, though, you know, thinking that way rather in terms of, well, how many vacation days will I allow myself in a year, right? And I know there's a lot of different ways to think about it, but I feel like, you know, just the core one is, like, as you were saying, that integration is, you know, like, you want to be healthy when you're at work. And in order to be healthy when you're at work, you have to have taken care of your life, but you can't take care of your life unless if you're working all the time. And so to get those two things, you know, integrated in a fashion that works is kind of the key to being productive at work. But, you know, to also be very clear, in that area of coaching, the end goal is that you are more productive at work. I mean, this is coaching for future leaders paid for by the company you work for. Okay, so you're like, you've guessed a bunch of them.
I've got one strike, but I'm gonna.
No, this is on the list.
Oh, it was? So okay, good.
You're three for three.
Three for so three. Far. Okay, so.
There's two more.
Oh, boy. I mean, I already mentioned scale. I think scale is a big, I guess growth management, would that be, I guess that falls under the same area.
I feel like that's more of the traditional, like growth management ends up being the traditional executive coaching.
Okay, you're going to have to give me a clue for the next one then. It's probably staring me right in the face. I just can't think of it.
When you're really young, you think you make a to-do list and you check off as much as possible.
Yes.
But then what's the big realization?
Priorities. Priority management. Yes. Yeah.
This is what...
See, I told you it was staring me right in the face. I mean...
Yeah. This is the number one one. And this idea
By the way, no pun intended. You said this is the number one one. And it's priority management. I get it.
Yes. It is. That... just that idea that everyone in the company knows what their top priority is for a day, and that you have a discussion every day about what it's going to take to get it done. And if you did get it done, did it matter? Right? Like this, you know, to go, I'm curious how you would define a leader in a company. Like, we're very clear, leader does not mean manager.
Right.
Manager is a different thing. What we're talking about is developing leadership skills. Like, how do you think about that for your own staff and employees?
Basically, when I look at it, and I think I'm still, because I've been away from it for so long, in terms of dealing with a team, because really only in this past year I've had a team again. But for me, I think it's creating an environment that allows for growth, not just for the company, but for the individuals, so that either A, that they make the company stronger and that the foundation stronger, but also that they make themselves stronger so they can go forth and do better stuff as well. But for me, it's also about making sure that I give them the tools and the resources that they need to do it without overwhelming them in the process. So I've seen a lot of times where people will come back to their bosses and say, you know, their boss keeps overloading them with work, and then eventually they just don't have the courage to go up and say, hey, look, you've given me 15 things that need to be done right away. Which one is the one? You know? So that's kind of how I look at it. I look at it as, you know, I mean, it's about fostering and nurturing an environment that allows for growth, creativity, achievement with hard work, obviously, but with a clear sense of direction and purpose that everyone can kind of get behind and follow.
I used to work for Tim O'Reilly, who's a kind of a big name in tech.
Yep.
And he had a number of great phrases come out at various all-hands meetings. And one of my favorites was this observation he made about the company, which was, if we see you treading water, we'll throw you two rocks.
Right.
And, you know, that is like definitely, that's a common dynamic at a lot of companies, is that if you're doing well, you get more responsibility piled on you,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the reward for good work is more work, and then bad work, people just sort of ignore you while you collect your paycheck. The thing, as we interview companies, as we start launching it, everyone uses different language, but they basically, I think, all mean the same thing. They say, you know, like, as we train these skills, can we also train these kind of meta goals of creativity, tenacity, innovation, entrepreneurship, a couple other words that people sometimes use. But I feel like they all kind of mean the same thing,
mm-hmm.
that there's a way that you worked in school, which is you were told what the homework assignment was and then you completed it.
Right, and it was very time-oriented, too.
Yes.
Tasks weren't, I mean, I've talked about this before, is that when you're a young kid, you're focused on the task. You don't care what time it is, because you can't tell time.
Yeah.
You know, but once we get into school, so we swerve completely in the other direction, where,
yeah.
you know, my daughter can't even finish lunch at school half the time, because she's forced outside before. So everyone works a little bit differently, right? But yeah, I see what you're saying.
And then you move to the company, and there's still a lot of that task-based work. It does exist, but the people who get too comfortable waiting to be told what to do, they miss these opportunities and end up, I think, I notice that they end up frustrating their managers a lot. When it's like, no, like, the real important work inside of a company is the opposite. You're not told what to do. You're told what the problem is, and then you tell everyone else how you're going to solve it and when it's going to get done. It's like just the complete reverse of how you've been trained your whole life. And I feel like most people are not even aware of that that change in mindset. And so it's almost like the Matrix. Like, the managers and leaders in the company are the people that just one day woke up and said, whoa, actually work is completely different than I thought it was. Let me try and, you know, find, you know, be the problem solver here. And one reason I'm excited to bring coaching in to the entire staff is, like, they shouldn't have to figure this out on their own. They should just be told, no, this is actually where the heavy hitters are. And and here's how to do it, and you know it's completely trainable, and maybe some people still aren't going to want to, and that's fine. They don't have to, but a lot of people are going to look at that and say, "Oh, that makes sense." And I don't know. It could be really exciting. And I feel like it starts with what's your priority.
Right.
Knowing your priority lets you then start examining your priority. And you know, one of the things that happens in startups all the time is people will say, "Well, you know, the feature is launched," and that's a very task-based mindset. But the real question is, did anyone like the feature?
Right.
Right? Who has responsibility for that? And if you don't let the person building the feature have responsibility for it, then you create this huge roadblock, you know, where they're constantly waiting for feedback from the managers. Whereas you just flip it and say, like, all right, you put out this feature. How are people reacting to it? Is it getting the effect that you're wanting? Almost invariably, you put it out and it turns out you were wrong in some major way. And so, like, my team works pretty well this way. And I had a great experience where we built a big feature for coaches. It wasn't actually that hard to build, but they've been asking for it, and it was going to be a really important feature. We built it. Alicia, who built it, started at like 8 a.m., launched at 11 a.m., so super rapid turnaround. We showed it to the coaches immediately, got feedback from them for about an hour, and then it was really harsh feedback. And then we rebuilt it and relaunched it again at 3 p.m., right? So there was not a lot of programming in order to do that. But if you think about that in calendar time, because Alicia has access to good feedback from the actual customer, and because she has complete authority and autonomy both to be wrong and to make adjustments, that she could do this whole thing in one day of calendar time, whereas in a traditional organization, you would research it, you would plan it, you would pass it off to engineering, you would build it, you would launch it, you would pass it back to the person who initially researched it, they would research the reaction, they would pass it back to engineering with changes. Engineering would say, well, I moved on to a new project, so I'll get back to this in 2 weeks. And a month later, you'd get through that entire iteration cycle.
Now, I'm going to guess on the fifth one. Is it information management? Is like understanding all the information that's coming at you? Is that? I guess that's more inbox management.
Yeah, we would lump that under inbox.
So you got to give me the last one, because I got pretty good at guessing. So before we wrap up.
You're really
up,
good.
So.
I'm like so psyched that you were able to guess these so easily, right? Because like... You know, just sort of the process of building a startup is like you have a plan for how it's going to work, but you also want some good luck along the way. And I feel like this was our good luck. We just stumbled into it, and it was like, and it fit so well with what we're doing, but it also was like everyone wanted it. Like we have not talked to anyone that didn't want it, and they all wanted essentially the same things. And you're just reaffirming that by guessing like everything on the list. The last one was meetings. This one has had a little bit of flex. Like actually Medium is not that interested because they, you know, because of Holacracy, their whole company is filled with amazing meeting facilitators. But your traditional company runs a lot of meetings, too many meetings that are all poorly run. No agenda, no preparation, no action items. No goals for the meeting. Too many. The wrong people are invited. No way of. No good systems for brainstorming. No good systems on coming to conclusions. Right. Like I got a chance to tour the main IDEO headquarters once. And I just loved that every meeting room had written on the walls the rules for facilitation, because everyone there like recognizes that creativity does not come from genius, it comes from process. And they have really trained everyone on a process that generates lots of ideas, and then from those ideas, they're able to do things that look to the outside world like there's genius behind them. No, it's actually behind the scenes, it's process. So there's often a lot to do there, and especially for up and coming leaders, how you prepare and behave in a meeting, it draws on a lot of communication skills. It draws on just a lot of meeting facilitation techniques. And as you learn those, you start to go to meetings and you're the leader, right? Not because you are the loudest, right? Like a lot of people try and shout down the rest of the meeting and that's how they try to lead. And those people are terrible. But actually, like, thoughtful, well-facilitated meetings ends up, making you, really seem like a really influential and high-impact person at your company.
Yeah, it's fun. John Polster, who edits the podcast, he is huge into meetings, and he facilitates meetings at his organization, and he's fascinated by the not just the idea of making better meetings, but just the fact that so many meetings are so poorly run. And that definitely is a huge pain point. I probably, again, staring me right in the face. I probably should have guessed that one too.
But I mean, for the high pressure situation that we're in, recording this podcast live, I feel like 4 out of 5 is pretty freaking amazing.
So Tony, we should probably get ready to wrap up here, but I want to, coach.me for teams is basically, it's in its infancy at this point, right?
And we're ready for companies to sign up, and the CEO doesn't need to, be involved in this. It's like any manager basically with any sort of budget, go to our homepage, and it's one of the main links there. You can get on the waiting list, and we'll get to you pretty soon. Now that we have it up and running a little bit, it's pretty clear how we're going to be able to get it to everyone. And so that is probably one of the calls to action for listeners. The other would just be to personal self improvement. Coach.me, that is our main bag, and we'd love for you to try our app, and all that stuff is available from the website, coach.me. And then, randomly, do you think that any of your listeners would make good coaches?
I think so, yeah, absolutely.
This is, the thing, because of Coach.me for Teams, we now basically have an unlimited demand for business coaches. And what we think you need to bring to the table beforehand is a desire, some personal expertise. We don't think you need any sort of woo-woo coaching certification. We'll teach you a coaching methodology that works for online, and then you're sort of this advisor / coach. And honestly, there's no end of demand for that as far as we can see. And so if anyone is interested in that, you do get paid, but the pitch I would give you is that it's much more about the feeling you get from helping other people. I mean, I'm shocked how many of our top coaches are C-level people with full-time jobs. And so I don't know, I know personally, like, I started this company because I felt that desire to pay it forward so strongly. And I think there's other people out there like that. Our top, the first coach that we put out for Coach.Teams is or Coach.Me for Teams was a CTO for a tech startup in Boston. The second coach is a CEO of a 250-person resort down in Texas. I mean, just like a wide range of really high-level people who want to mentor people. So I'm sure you have a ton of listeners like that. And again, like, there's only, just go to Coach.me and you'll be able to figure all that stuff out.
Well, and the Patreon supporters of the podcast who love to offer, kind of their own remuneration to help me out in their patronage, they're already giving. So, I mean, what better way to give than to take some of the stuff that they've either learned, from me or from whoever, and to apply, or whatever their area of expertise is. I mean, I've been getting the emails from you for a while, and there's so many varied options there too. So check out Coach Taught Me. And Tony, thanks again for joining me this week on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Mike, a pleasure. It was super fun to hash this out together because, just super fun. And I feel honored that you would have me on a second time. So thank you.
Thanks to Tony for joining me this week on the podcast. I really had a great time chatting with him. We've had some really great interviews and some great conversations over the past few weeks, and I aim to keep that going. And what you can do to help me with that isn't just, you know, give me some ratings and reviews in iTunes. So that's really helpful. But also to lend your support to the show if you can in a monetary way. You can become a supporter of the podcast, get the entire interview. There's about anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes, depending on the episode, of additional content, plus 2 bonus episodes every single week, exclusive to Patreon supporters. Just go to patreon.com/productivityist, and you can level up your Productivityist podcast experience there. That's all I have for today. I want you to take some of the stuff you learned today and start to apply it either just to yourself or to your team if you have that capability or you've got that flexibility to do so. Until I see you next week, or until you hear from me next week, stop guessing, start going, and keep moving things forward. Take care.